Do you have twins in your family? Like, what's going on there? It's creepy. I mean, like, you know, fraternal twins where you know, they have some differences. You can tell them apart. They each end up having kind of like their own unique personalities. Like, that's pretty easy, right? It just looks like you have a really similar looking sibling. But what about identical twins, all right? Especially when they like dress the same, they have the same haircut, have talk the same way, have the same interests, all of that. Then it gets hard to like figure out. And it's creepy. You know, can they read each other's minds? Can they like feel and sense when the other one's in trouble or hurting? Like, is it like some weird thing where like if one breaks their arm, like the other one's like arm hurts too? I don't know. That's stuff I've heard. It's probably not true. What about conjoined twins? That's real weird, right? And because I'm an immature child, I got a lot of questions about how some things work. And we might answer some of those questions this week on Our Weird World.
Our Weird World.
Welcome to Our Weird World. I am your host, John Henson, and this week, talking about twins. Interesting sets of twins from history doing weird things, right? I grew up in the school that I went to, oddly enough, there were at least four. I can distinctly remember four sets of twins. We had one set of twins in my class, but I could tell them apart real easy because one, they were just very different from each other. They dressed different, you know, they had a couple little facial features that were just slightly different that I could tell. The class below me had, I think, two sets of twins, and I could not figure out who was who because, man, they dressed the same. They had the same haircut. They literally could have swapped each other out, you know, like early Full House style. And I never would have known, you know, other than the fact that I saw them both together. Crazy. And then there was like another set of twins, like a couple of grades beneath that. And I couldn't figure out which one of them was whoever. So, but this week, looking at some interesting twins from history, just looking at just kind of that sibling relationship. Some of the twins, like the first two we're going to talk about are going to be like conjoined twins, and that's going to be fun. We're going to talk about just some other twins, sisters, siblings, very closely related like that. And it's going to be weird. It's going to be real weird. So let's jump into it. Our first story is about Lazarus and Johannes Baptista Colloredo. I think that's probably how you say it. Colloredo. Yeah, sure. Who were born in Genoa, Italy on March 20th, 1617, going way back here to start. What made these twins special was that the two boys were joined together like at the torso. So their entire, almost basically their entire upper half was conjoined. Lazarus was mostly normal, while Johannes seemed mostly brain dead and just kind of hung off of Lazarus's body, like with his mouth open and his eyes closed. He never really acknowledged anything. He was just like, you know, the whole time. Even more, Lazarus was the only one who ate and used the bathroom, even though, you know, Johannes grew and aged at the same rate. I believe that, like, Johannes kind of, like, had his own, like, you know, butthole, maybe I get to it here in a second, but, you know, I don't know if they had their own sexual organs or if they shared one. Clearly, they shared a full digestive tract, you know, if Lazarus was the only one that ate. But yeah, I mean, Johannes was just kind of like this big parasite almost. He grew and aged the same way that Lazarus did. The only real sign of life that Johannes really ever exuded was like a slight twitch of his arm and like some occasional like frothy saliva that would form around his mouth. Otherwise, like just completely nonverbal, just kind of, like I said, just a giant tumor, a little giant parasite there. And because there was really nothing else they could do, the twins joined a traveling circus and toured around Italy, Germany, Spain, and France, and then eventually to London. And Lazarus, like, for the most part, he was known as a gentleman. He was quite handsome, apparently. You know, if you could look past the other half of a human being that was, like, kind of growing out of his stomach. During their stay in France, Lazarus played handball with a man named Henry Sauvel. Sorry, I don't know why I said it weird like that. You know, and handball, you know, is basically like, if you've never seen it, it's basically like soccer, but you can use your hands, which... I don't know why that's not more popular than soccer. I don't know. Seems pretty cool to me. Let's see. Where were we? So, yeah. So, like, if you can imagine Lazarus, he's kind of running around playing handball, and he's got Johannes, like, kind of tied up against him. So he's not, like, flailing around everywhere. Because that would be pretty funny, you know, Lazarus just kind of like going out for a run, and then Johannes is just like, like flopping around. That's mean. That's probably not okay. Lazarus also told Sauvel that he had killed a man in a bar fight after the man had teased him. Lazarus, I don't know why I keep saying Lazarus. Like, why do I have a lisp all of a sudden? It's like... Are there, like, you know, do twins have, like, eternal superpowers and there's just, like, one floating around here, like, disrupting my speech because I'm, like, because he thinks I'm going to make fun of twins? I'm not. I just have genuine questions. I'm telling stories. But, yeah, Lazarus had apparently been sentenced to death for this murder, but he had convinced the court to let him go free after explaining that, like, executing him would unjustly also kill Johannes. And, you know, the court bought it. And following like a tour over in Britain and Scotland, the twins mostly disappeared from history. We don't really know what happened to them after that. And despite, you know, having Johannes like on him and taking up, you know, almost his entire front half, Lazarus actually did find love, and he got married and he had children. Now, this obviously brings up a lot of questions. All right. How do you have sex when you essentially have another person like growing off of you and in the way? All right. I'm trying to think about this. You know, did he lie on his back and then also like spread Johannes's like limp legs like to the side? And then, you know, and then like his wife or whatever just has to look at Johannes's back while she's doing it? Or was Lazarus the one on top? And then Johannes just kind of became like the meat in this weird, gross sandwich. All right. These are the kind of things I think about, you guys. It explains a lot about me. And I wish I had the answers, and honestly, I kind of wish I could have seen it. Like, not in, like, a weird, like, porn sort of way, but, like, a real scientific way, you know? Like, you know how you watched, maybe some of you, I didn't, but, like, you know how some of you watched, like, a childbirth video in health class? You know, it's, like, for educational purposes. Like, it's not porn, but you're learning something. You're learning a lot. Like, that's kind of how I want to... Anyway, I've gone on. I'm trying to defend myself, and I feel like I can't. Like, it's weird, you guys. I'm weird. Also, like, we don't... Because Johannes wasn't able to communicate with others, like, we don't know if he kind of felt anything while all of that was going on, or if he was just, like, if his entire body was just numb. I don't know. These are a lot of unanswered questions, and unfortunately... there's not enough history of the Colloredo twins around to talk about that. So that's kind of the end of their story. Next, more of a story here. The story of Chang and Ing Bunker, who were born on May 11th, 1811, near Bangkok, Thailand. And because it was Thailand and these sorts of things just kind of tend to happen there because the infrastructure is bad and waters are all dirty. Chang and Ing were born fused together at the sternum, well, connected at the sternum by a piece of cartilage. And other than having a fused liver, the twins were completely independently complete and were the first people known as Siamese twins because this is from the Siam region down in Thailand and Asia. So that's where the term Siamese twins come from. In 1829, a Scottish merchant named Robert Hunter saw the twins swimming in the river, and at first he like initially mistook them for like some weird and exotic new animal, which kind of racist. But look, you're a white guy, and you've all you've seen is white people because you're from Europe, and then you go to Thailand, and already the people look a little different, and then you see two of these people who are stuck together. Playing in the river. You know, maybe they're like pretending to be a hippo or something, just like, you know, or a whale. I don't know. Anyway, it's a weird visual. But Hunter decided, like, you know, he was super fascinated with him, and he actually paid the twins' parents to allow them to join his traveling circus. The twins, obviously, they were a huge hit because people just mainly enjoyed gawking at these strange little Asian men who were stuck together, obviously, because circuses were racist back then. While on a hunting trip in Massachusetts in 1831, the twins felt like they were being harassed by more than a dozen locals. And in Massachusetts, I don't doubt that, you know, it's like, hey, look at these guys there, these Asians, what are these stupid little Asians doing? Looking like they're stuck together. Huh? Tommy, look at this. Look at these weirdos. They just... Where are you from? You're not from America. That's the truth. Ugh. You're a little... I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this. Every chance I get, I like to do a bad Boston accent because it's just fun for me. And, you know. Anyway. Where were we? I've lost my place entirely. They're being harassed by like a dozen locals here. And one of the twins used the butt of his gun to strike a man named Eldridge Jerry, who they feel like he got too close, all right? And in response, Jerry then chucked a rock at him, striking one of the twins in the head and drawing blood. The twins were like, you know, they're not backing down. They shot at Jerry. It was a blank round, but they still shot at him to try to just, like, chase him off. The next day, one of the men in the group pressed charges and had the twins arrested for disturbing the peace. After paying bond for good behavior, the twins returned home, trying to just kind of restart, get back in the circus. But their manager, James W. Hill, was outraged by what they had done. He felt like they had damaged their reputation, and he felt like he couldn't do anything with them. So he resigned and placed them in the care of one of their mutual friends named Charles Harris. Charles got him back into the circus, and they toured for 3 more years before they moved to the tiny community of Trap Hill up in Wilkes County, North Carolina, up there, obviously kind of like near kind of between Wilkesboro and like Elkin, kind of like at the foothills, base of the foothills or whatever. They bought a small plantation and a group of slaves because, hey guys, guess what? Slaves weren't just for white people back then, all right? You had some money. Even Asians could own slaves. American Indians owned slaves as well. So, you know, fun times. They bought this plantation where they hunted deer, fished for trout. They quickly built good relationships with the wealthy families in the area and actually became naturalized citizens, even though federal law at the time restricted that status to, quote, free white persons. So, like, there was literally a federal law on the books at the time that said only white people could have free status, but Chang and Ng Bunker had such great reputations and were so beloved in the community that, like, they were still able to get that citizenship. Despite objections from several area newspapers because, look, I mean, granted, all right, we'll give you your citizenship, but you ain't marrying a white woman. But guess what? That's what they did. They married... Adelaide and Sarah Ann Yates on April 13th, 1843. In all, the group ended up having 21 children. So again, go ahead and figure out this visual. All right. You got Chang and Ng. All right. They're fused together at the sternum. All right. Maybe they can like twist their hips around to get to baby making. But then like, did they do it with each of their wives at the same time? Was there like, did they have to put like blinders on? They have to put blinders on like they're a couple of horses so they would only look at their wife. I don't know, man. Like, could they only have sex with their wives at the same time, you know? And like, man, I'm like, seriously, like, what if, you know, it's been a while and Chang, you know, I don't know why it's got to be Chang, but it's the one I picked. You know, maybe he feels the need to, you know, kind of distribute some free literature, if you know what I mean. And Aang is not in the mood. How do you navigate that situation? All right. So many questions. And I wish I had the answers to this, because endlessly fascinating, you know, like what if one of them has to poop and the other one doesn't? Like, you gotta, like, how do you straddle a toilet when one of you is pooping? Or did maybe they get, because they were pretty wealthy, they could probably do this. Did they, like, both sit down on, like, did they have, like, two toilets made side by side? I don't know if they could even, like, no, I don't, or maybe they had two toilets, like, facing each other, and they would both, like, kind of sit down on the toilet and just, like, stare into each other's eyes while they pooped, or maybe they peed. You got to sit down for both. You know, maybe if one of them had to pee, like, you know, you could get away with, like, one of them, you know, both of you standing there at the toilet and the other one just kind of looking away or whatever. But then, man, you know, like, what happens if, like, when they got sick, did both of them get sick at the same time? I mean, probably, like, germs are, like, going back and forth that close. That's probably more than likely what happened. But, man, I mean, just, like, so many questions. Like, or, like, if they ever... They probably didn't really ever go to school, but, like, were they both good at the same subjects? Was one better at math and the other better at history? Like, how did it all work? You know? I mean, and I know what you're thinking. Like, John, please. Like, I would rather you actually talk about how they had marital relations with their wives. I think that was much more interesting. You painted a much better visual, you know? I'm trying to go through all of the possible positions that they could have been in. And really, I think for the bunkers, like, you know, Lazarus and Johannes, they could get away with going one or the other. But I think really the best option is, I think it's the full blinders, laying on the back, twisting the hips, and just, you know, what if they looked at each other in the eyes while it happened? How weird would that be? Why does my mind go to these places? And I brought you along with, I'm sorry. All right. Anyway, we're going to move on. Eventually, like, Chang, this show has gone so far off the rails. The twins eventually fully considered themselves, like, full Americans. They spoke fluent English. They voted in elections. Like, by all accounts, like, they were, I guess they were two separate, like, counted as two separate citizens. But after a few years of marriage and a few kids, the two sisters... This is where it gets weird. The two sisters actually began to dislike each other. So this kind of maybe answers some of the questions. Actually, it just brings up more questions. but, like, the two sisters literally, like, they began to dislike each other. They could not stand being around each other, but, like, they couldn't tear the family apart. Like, they couldn't literally tear them apart. Like, Chang and Aang are a package deal. So what happened was Chang and Aang used the wealth that they'd accumulated over the years and had separate houses constructed in the nearby town of White Plains. And every 3 days, Chang and Aang would switch between each wife's home. All right. So now, like, what's the rule here? You know, oh, we're going to Chang's house for the weekend. All right, Aang, listen, buddy, this is my wife. Granted, they're sisters, they look similar, but you can't look at my wife, dude. This is my wife. I gotta do my job here, all right? Got a couple more kids to bang out here, all right? I need you to just close your eyes the entire time, all right? Please don't look at me while I'm doing it, because that makes me uncomfortable. I already have to really psych myself up to get over the feeling of your hot breath against my neck every time I'm doing it, because that, it just makes it real difficult for me. And if you can just not look at me and just, I don't know, distract yourself somehow, read a magazine. I don't know. Like, how does that work? How does it work? I wish, these are the questions, all right? I don't care how the universe was created. I want to know how Chang and Aang Bunker had sex with their wives before and after they moved out of each other's houses. That's what keeps me up at night. Unfortunately for the Bunkers, the Civil War and the now worthless Confederate currency that they had been accumulating took a toll on their finances. And eventually the twins were broke and left with no choice but to rejoin the traveling circus to support their just massive families that they had built. Unfortunately, they never really regained the same popularity with Northern audiences thanks to their lives as slaveholders in the South. In 1870, Chang suffered a stroke on a return trip from a tour in Europe, and then actually 4 years later, he ended up dying in his sleep. And when Aang awoke to his dead brother, which I guess now is just technically a really big tumor, he understandably freaked out. You know, I get it. You know, waking up next to a dead person who's not attached to you is probably pretty traumatizing. But then to wake up to a person who's literally been attached to you your entire life, all right? I mean, we're talking almost 60 years at this point. Gotta be horrifying, all right? And he freaks out and he thinks that he's about to die as well. And look, if they had shared a heart rather than just a liver, yeah, absolutely. But since the liver was the only thing they shared, like, Aang actually did have a chance to survive. A doctor was called in to perform an emergency separation, but Aang actually did end up dying 3 hours later from a heart attack because, like, he just could not calm down because, yeah, one, it's his brother who just died, traumatizing, devastating. But then you also think that you're about to die. Like, you think you're literally looking at your future. And your future is, like, coming up real fast. So he did not make it. Their fused liver was actually salvaged and is actually on display right now in a museum in Philadelphia. All right. So fun times. All right. I think we're mostly out of the weird stuff now. All right. We've got three more stories. And we can get out of here. This is a story of the Pollock sisters. So these are still twins, but this is weird. All right. So on May 5th, 1957, Joanna and Jacqueline Pollock, Joanna is 11 years old. Jacqueline is six. They were walking to church with a friend when they were both hit and killed by a car. Their parents, John and Florence, were obviously devastated, but they vowed to have, have two more kids to replace them. And much to everyone's surprise, Florence actually ended up giving birth to twin girls a year later, which she named Jillian and Jennifer. Now, John, this entire time, had been prophesying that Florence would give birth to, you know, replacement twins. And that's actually, like, the least weird aspect of the entire story. So not only did these new twins look exactly like Joanna and Jacqueline, but Jennifer actually developed a white line across her forehead and actually had the same birthmark on her left hip that Jacqueline had. Even though the family ended up moving to a new town where when the new twins were still infants, the girls were actually able to point out landmarks back in the old town that the older, the original sisters would have been very familiar with whenever the family went back to visit, you know? So it's like these new twins are born. They go to another town. All right. They're not even forming memories yet. And then anytime the family goes back to the old town to visit friends and family, whatever, these new twins recognize landmarks that they had never seen before, but that the original girls would have absolutely known by heart. The girls also, thank you, dog, the girls also ended up naming dolls and stuffed animals that the same names that the old girls had named their toys, including toys belonging to the girls that John and Florence had long gotten rid of. Sorry, I think I messed that up. The girls actually, like, began asking about toys and by name that the original girls had. Even though the new twins had never seen these toys, John and Florence had gotten rid of them after the girls had died. And these twins are, like, starting to ask for them by name. On several occasions, the twins claimed to have the same nightmare of being run over by a car. So reincarnation? Like, what's going on? Even stranger, like, as soon as the twins turned 5 years old, everything stopped. And, like, they stopped recalling things from the original girls' lives. they stopped like having the nightmares, everything. It all just stopped. And that's all we know. Like, the girls were interviewed about it. The twins were interviewed about it, and they have no idea what anybody's talking about. So who knows? Big mystery there. Next is the story of Jennifer and June Gibbons, who were born on April 11th, 1963, to a pair of Caribbean immigrants who were also members of the Royal Air Force in England. Although they were born at a military hospital in Yemen, the family arrived in England before moving to Wales in 1974. And if you're, you know, obviously Caribbean heritage, you're black, and being the only black children in an otherwise all-white world in England, the girls really started to rely on themselves. They became practically inseparable. And they even went so far as to actually make up their own language so that they could just communicate with each other and just kind of exclude this white world around them. And because British people are super racist, right? Not sure if you knew that, British people, pretty racist. Jennifer and June were treated poorly in school, and they became such a distraction because all of the other kids were being so racist that they were actually dismissed early each day as a way to prevent them from being bullied by other kids on their way home. Eventually the twins just stopped speaking to everyone. It like, all the kids in school, all the teachers, whatever, except to each other and their younger sister. And even then, they only used their made-up language, which, after people kind of stopped and listened to it, just turned out to be like a sped-up version of Bajan Creole, which was from their native country of Barbados. Although they continued to attend school, they just refused to learn how to read or write. In 1974, a series of child psychologists was actually brought in to try to figure them out, but like no one could get through to them. They just refused to talk and open up. They were eventually separated and sent to separate boarding schools where they, in response, they literally became catatonic. They refused to move, to speak, to eat, to do anything. And seeing as this would likely kill both of them, the girls were reunited with each other and spent the next several years isolated in their bedroom where they orchestrated theatrical productions with their dolls. That's all they did. They got this whole arsenal of dolls and they're just writing plays and performing them, getting real weird. Creating the plays obviously sparked an interest in creative writing, and the girls began writing several stories, which are mostly set in Malibu, California, oddly enough, with characters that had habits that were just as strange as they were. June Gibbons even ended up writing a novel called Pepsi Cola Addict, and the twins, and she actually sent it off to be published. Like most kids in their later teenage years, the two girls started doing drugs. In 1981, they started leaving their bedroom and started committing like petty crimes like vandalism and arson. They were eventually arrested for those crimes and were sentenced to indefinite detention under the United Kingdom's Mental Health Act. And so rather than going to like a juvenile center or going to prison, they were sent to a mental hospital. Not surprisingly, for the next 11 years, the girls refused to speak to anyone in the hospital except each other. And because of the antipsychotic medications they were giving, Jennifer developed tardive dyskinesia, which is a neurological disorder characterized by like involuntary repetitive movements. Basically just like someone who just sits there and just like twitches their head and like they can't help it. But they're just like, I mean, they're just mentally so far gone. While they stayed in this mental hospital, the girls entered into an agreement with each other that dictated if one of them died, the other one was required to just stop all of this and just start speaking to people and just going and living a normal life. But they also soon came to realize like they're not leaving this mental hospital. But they both, you know, kind of wanted to get out and live a normal life, if not for just the sake of the other one. And so they started to believe that one of them had to die in order for them to have a chance at a normal life. And since Jennifer had kind of already seemingly begun to mentally deteriorate with the tardive dyskinesia, she agreed to be kind of like this sacrificial lamb. And so when the girls were summoned to be transferred to a different hospital on March 9th, 1993, Jennifer was found unresponsive and she was pronounced dead a short time later of heart inflammation. Following Jennifer's death, June held up her end of the agreement and started talking to everyone She was interviewed by Harper's Bazaar and The Guardian and just told her life story, basically provided like all the details that I've just told. And since she was acting normal now, by all accounts, she was soon released from the hospital and moved back in to live with her family in Wales. And as of now, as far as I know, she just is living a normal life out there, just like as if none of this ever happened. So weird. Our last story is of the Erikson twins, Ursula and Sabina, who were born on November 3rd, 1967 in Sweden. By all accounts, they had a normal, loving childhood all the way up to the year 2000, when Ursula was actually living in the United States, while Sabina was living in Ireland with her partner and two children. On May 16th, 2008, Ursula traveled to Ireland to visit her twin sister, and then things kind of got weird. Following a fight between Sabina and her partner, the two sisters sneaked out of the house and traveled by ferry over to Liverpool, England. The next day, they went to the Liverpool police to report concerns over the safety of Sabina's children before boarding a bus to London. And by early afternoon, on the way out of Liverpool, the bus driver was very aware of how strange the twins were acting and made an unscheduled stop in the town of Kiel to let them off. When the girls tried to board after a quick break, the bus driver asked to search their bags, which, I mean, they were clinging to very tightly. Like, they were obviously hiding something and they didn't want anybody to know about it. But I don't think they were actually hiding anything. I think they're just both in like this weird mental breakdown right now. When the twins refused to let the bus driver search their bags, they were left behind. Meanwhile, the station manager where the bus had stopped called police because these girls are just like creeping everybody out. The police came, they kind of questioned the girls, see what was going on. But at this point, they seemed harmless, a little weird, but harmless, you know, just some Swedish girls. And the police let them go. The twins then left the station and attempted to cross the M6, which is, you know, England's version of the interstates, on foot, which not recommended. Sabina was promptly struck by a car, but somehow only suffered minor injuries. The resulting car crash from all of the cars trying to dodge her and then subsequently hitting her was caught on film, actually, by a crew that was filming an episode of Motorway Cops, which I think is England's version of Cops. So as police, you know, ran over to the scene to kind of talk with everyone to figure out what happened, Ursula, without warning, just sprinted right back into traffic and actually like ran into the side of a passing truck that was going about 60 miles an hour. Sabina then followed right after her and was hit head on by a Volkswagen. So like between the two of them, they have been hit by three cars now and caused a freeway pileup. Ursula's legs were now crushed and Sabina was knocked unconscious, but they survived. While medics tried to tend to the twins, Ursula screamed and spit at them, claiming that the paramedics weren't real. And Sabina was shouting that the medics were about to steal Ursula's organs. Like, it's crazy, you know, just like, the medics aren't real. They're going to steal the organs from the sister. I'm sorry. I had to do Swedish Chef. If like that's the rule, all right? If there's a story about a Swedish person on this show, you get Swedish Chef. So, I mean, look, I make the rules. Anyway, so after claiming that the medics were going to steal Ursula's organs, Sabina then leapt to her feet, called out the police for help, slapped the officer who ran over to then help, and then sprinted back out into traffic. It's like, come help me. And then the officer comes, yes, miss, how can I help you? Slap. Just kidding. And then just sprints off back into traffic. This time, however, Sabina was quickly captured, restrained, and put into an ambulance. Sabina was released after about a 5-hour stay in the hospital, having been deemed psychologically under control. I don't know how you can make that determination in 5 hours. 3 days later, she was released from court after pleading guilty to hitting a police officer and trespassing on the motorway. And while Ursula remained in the hospital, Sabina wandered the streets of the town called Stoke-on-Trent looking for her. Like, she had no idea where she was. Later that night, Sabina met Glenn Hollinshead and Peter Malloy on the street and asked them for directions to a hotel. Hollinshead, after listening to the story felt really sorry for Sabina, and offered to take her back to his house. Sabina accepted, told Hollinshead how she was trying to find her sister. And then after the two started drinking, she started to get really weird again. She was constantly looking out the window. She then offered the men cigarettes, only to then just immediately snatch them out of their mouths and claim they might be poisoned. Like, it's just weird, weird behavior. The next day, Hollinshead made several phone calls to try to help Sabina out and try to find her sister. That night, he then went over to his neighbor's house to ask for some tea bags because, you know, Britons and their tea, before going back inside. But then minutes later, Hollinshead stumbled out of his house and told that same neighbor that Sabina had stabbed him, and then he collapsed and died. Why? Stabbed him over tea bags, I guess. While that neighbor called for help, Sabina sprinted out of the house with a hammer, hitting herself on the head with it as she ran. Like, it's just a Looney Tunes episode at this point. Just running around, hitting herself on the head with a hammer. A passing driver saw Sabina and then chased her down, took the hammer from her, like, wrestled her down to the ground, took the hammer away from her. But then, whilst they wrestled, Sabina took a roof tile, of all things, out of her pocket and smashed it over this guy's head. She got up, started running away, but by this time, paramedics were coming on the scene. They were starting to catch up to her. Eventually, Sabina made it to the A50, which is another thing for their highway system, and then just jumped off the 40-foot overpass and landed on the pavement below. She broke both ankles and fractured her skull, which incapacitated her enough for paramedics to come and rescue her and take her to the hospital. Sabina was released from the hospital 5 months later and was immediately charged with murder because, yeah, obviously. Her defense argued that she suffered from a condition called folie à deux, which is a shared psychosis in which one twin perceives the same issues and feels the same as another twin. So that kind of answers one of my questions from earlier. You know, it's this weird psychological situation where they do feel each other, maybe. I don't know if it's true or not. Sabina's defense lawyer also argued that she suffered from a rare type of schizophrenia in which she heard voices in her head but had no idea what they were saying. And that's got to be, if that's true, that's got to be so frustrating. All right. Bad enough to hear voices, but then if they're like speaking another language, how upsetting would that be? Like, Anyway. Thanks to the fact that Sabina just then refused to answer any questions as to why on earth she did what she did, she was convicted of manslaughter with diminished responsibility, which is that kind of law that a lot of countries have where, you know, it basically it's not guilty by reason of insanity here, where even if you did the most heinous thing, you can get off by this diminished responsibility, saying, oh, well, you know, I wasn't in my right mind. What am I going to do? And so she was only given a 5-year prison sentence. Meanwhile, Ursula made a full recovery from the hospital and returned back to the United States. So great. She's running around here somewhere. To this day, like, no one has any idea why all of this happened. Like, they have not talked about it. They haven't offered any explanations for it or anything since then. So that's a frustrating way to end the story, but that's how it's going to be. Twins, right? Like, who knew? Who knew how weird those people could be? But, you know, I don't know. If you are a twin, I would love to hear your story. I would love to know if, like, you really do sense all this stuff or if all of this is just a giant witch hunt because you have, like, a little clone of yourself right beside you at all times. This was a real eye-opening episode, I think, for a lot of people. So let's recap and see what we learned.
What did we learn?
Number one, the Pollock family had just a terrible tragedy. Their two daughters got hit and killed by a car. And then they had twins, and those twins were like, yeah, we remember all of that. Like, where's our doll? And, oh, look, there's the school that we used to go to. Totally remember that. And then they turned 5, and they have no idea what any of all of that they were talking about. Crazy. Like, it's just weird. Number two, what was going on with the Erickson sisters? They just got together. And then they went crazy, just running all over the freeway, getting hit by cars, and then killing people. I don't know. Number three, though, I think the big takeaway here, though, is that I am a crazy person, right? That just having this weird fascination with how conjoined twins have sex with their partners, that's weird, all right? And look, I can tell you with full honesty, I'm not gonna search for conjoined twin porn because I don't need that on my browser history. All right, I don't. I'm gonna just be eternally curious for what that's like. Next week on Our Weird World, we are getting back to just a single story, all right? It is the story of Belle Gunness, a female serial killer. I think she's Norwegian, but then she immigrated to the United States and then just started murdering some dudes. And we are going to look at that story just of this crazy woman. Probably going to be some more bad Scandinavian accents, so get ready for that. And yeah. Gonna be a fun time. Gonna close out the year, try to close out the year on a strong note and head into 2022. So that'll be fun. Thank you all for listening. I'm sorry I'm a crazy person and I'm obsessed with conjoined twins trying to figure out how they have sex, but maybe you can look past that. Honestly, if we're being honest with ourselves, you're probably now just eternally fascinated with that too. I put that seed in your brain and I'm not sorry for that. So thank you for listening though. Keep telling all your friends if you want to poison their minds as well, and keep it weird.